17. A golden chain. Engraving on metal plate. Tavril Aramary was a very busy man. As we walked the long hallway toward the imposing set of doors that led to his audience chamber, they opened several times to admit or release brisk walking servants and courtiers. Most of these carried scrolls or whole stacks thereof. A few wore long, sharp shapes that I assumed were swords or spears. Still more were very well dressed, their foreheads bearing the marks of Aramary. No one lingered in the corridor to chat, though some spoke while on the move. I heard Cinnamite flavored with exotic accents, Narshis, Min, Veln, Mencheyev, others I did not recognize. A busy man who valued useful people, something to keep in mind if I hoped to enlist his aid. At the doors, we paused while Hado announced us to the two women who stood there. High Northers, I guessed by the fact that they were both shorter than average and by their telltale straight hair, which hung long enough that I could see it sway. They did not appear to be guards at first glance, no weapons that I could see, though they could have had something small or close to their bodies. But something in the set of their shoulders let me know that was exactly what they were. They were not Aramary, or even Amon. Were they here then to guard the Lord from his own family? Or was their presence emblematic of something else? One of the women went inside to announce us. A moment later, a knot of other people emerged and filed past us. They stared at me with open curiosity. They looked at Hado, too, I noticed, especially the two full-bloods who emerged together and immediately fell to whispering at each other. I glanced at Hado, who seemed not to even see them. I wished I'd dared to touch his face, because there was a pleased air about him that I wasn't sure how to interpret. The guard emerged from the chamber and, without a word, held the door open for us. I followed Hado inside. The audience chamber was open and airy. Two enormous windows, each many paces in width and twice Shiny's height, dominated the walls on either side of the door. As we walked, the sounds of our footsteps echoed from high overhead. I was too nervous to look up. The room's sole piece of furniture, a great block-like chair, sat at the farthest point from the door, atop a tiered dais. And though I could not see the chair's occupant, I could hear him, writing something on a piece of paper. The scratching of his pen sounded very loud in the room's vast silence. I could see his blood sigil, too, a stranger mark than anything I'd seen yet, a half-moon, downturned, bracketed on either side by glimmering chevrons. We waited, silent, while he finished whatever he was doing. When the Lord set his pen down, Hado abruptly dropped to one knee, his head bowed low. Quickly, I followed suit. After a moment, Lord Tavril said,
"You'll both be pleased to know, I think, that the House of the Risen Sun is no more. Its threat has been removed."
I blinked in surprise. The Lord Aramary's voice was soft, low-pitched, and almost musical, though the words he spoke were anything but. I wanted very much to ask what removed meant, but I suspected that would be a very foolish thing to do.
"What of Sediman?" asked Hado, "if I may ask."
"She's being brought here. Her husband has not yet been captured, but the Scriveners tell me it's only a matter of time. We aren't the only ones seeking him, after all."
I wondered at first, then realized, of course he would have informed the city's godlings. I cleared my throat, unsure of how to pose a question without offending this most powerful of men.
"You may speak, Erushoth."
I faltered a moment, realizing this had been another clue I'd missed. Hado's gesture of using Morona honorifics. It was the sort of thing one did in dealing with folk of foreign lands to be diplomatic, an Aramary habit. I took a deep breath. What about the godlings being held captive by the new lights, Lord Aramary? Have they been rescued?
"Several bodies have been found, both in the city where the lights dumped them and at the house. The local godlings are dealing with the remains."
Bodies. I forgot myself and stared at the man in gape-mouthed shock. More than the four I knew of? Date had been busy. Which ones? In my mind, I heard the answer to this question, too. Paitya? Keter? Dump? Lil? Maddie.
"I haven't been given names as yet, though I've been informed that the one who calls himself Madding was among them. I believe he was important to you. I'm very sorry.
He sounded sincere, if distant. I lowered my eyes and muttered something. Tavril Aramary then crossed his legs and steepled his fingers, or so I guessed from his movements.
But this leaves me with a dilemma, Erushoth. What to do with you? On the one hand, you have done a great service to the world by helping to expose the New Light's activities. On the other, you are a weapon, and it is foolish in the extreme to leave a weapon lying about where anyone can pick it up and use it.
I lowered my head again, dropping lower than I had before, until my forehead pressed against the cold, glowing floor. I had heard this was the way to show penitence before nobles, and penitent was exactly how I felt. Bodies. How many of those dead, desecrated godlings had been poisoned by my blood rather than Date's?
Then again, said the Lord Aramary, my family has long known the value of dangerous weapons.
Against the floor, my forehead wrinkled in confusion.
What? The gods know now that demons still exist, said Hado, through my shock.
He sounded carefully neutral. This isn't something you'll be able to hide.
And we will give them a demon, said the Lord Aramary. The very one responsible for murdering their kin. That should satisfy them, leaving you, Erushoth, for us.